This is a Triple J podcast.
I'm sure you can remember a time when you imagined yourself being the ruler of your own country. Usually you leave those ambitions at the primary school gate, but one young Australian has done the opposite. What started as a joke as a kid, he now says has turned into a fully fledged nation. At 21, he says he's the youngest president in the world. I'm Dave Marchese. This is Hack's Long Listen of the Week, a chat with President Daniel Jackson of the Free Republic of Virtus. So where is this country, you ask? Well, Daniel says it's jammed in between Croatia and Serbia on a piece of land that he says isn't claimed by anyone, so he's taken it. Croatia says he's got no right to this land, but Daniel thinks otherwise.
I'm definitely eccentric. I mean, not everyone wakes up and decides to go and create a country.
So he's been thrown out and banned from Croatia, chased by their water police. But Daniel, who was raised in Melbourne, says he is not giving up. Virtus has its own flag. It sells digital residency. And he's built a really big following online.
Yeah, I usually get recognised a few times a week as someone goes and takes a photo with me or whatever, and it's absolutely amazing to see that sort of support.
But is this for real? Like, do these micronations have any legitimacy? We ask an expert later, and the answer may surprise you.
If you can settle there and you can get, you know, a group of 50, 60, 100 people, that might be enough to say, hey, I'm a state.
So do you support this idea of building a new country focused on equality, humanitarianism? It's a wild adventure. Whatever you think, you do have to admire the determination. Here's my chat with Daniel Jackson, President of the Free Republic of Virtus. President Daniel Jackson, thank you so much for joining us on Hack.
No worries. Thank you very much for having me.
Am I okay to call you Daniel, or would you prefer President? Like, how formal are the Virtusian people? I got to check.
You can call me Daniel. It's no problem at all.
Okay. Daniel, the one question I know everyone's got is, why is he doing this? What made Daniel decide to start his own country as a teenager?
It was initially me and a couple of friends, basically at school. Some of us, we took some inspiration from Liberland, which is an entity up about 20 kilometres up north, who is basically in the same situation as Virtus. We didn't exactly share the exact same values, but we were interested in claiming an unclaimed piece of land and creating a state.
How did you find this piece of land? And can you give us a bit of an understanding of how big it is?
Basically, this piece of land was unclaimed as neither Croatia or Serbia wanted it. They were both arguing over another piece of land on the other side of the Danube that was much larger. Croatia insists this piece of land is part of Serbia, whereas Serbia considers their border to be the central line of the Danube, which effectively left this piece of land unclaimed. So basically, it allowed the oldest active claimant under international law, which is in this case Virtus, to be rightful to the land. When it comes to the country's size, we're slightly larger than the Vatican. We're still very small. We're only about 75 soccer fields, so we're the second smallest country in the world. The land can definitely be built upon, especially the northern side of Virtus, which is actually quite elevated. We have done a lot of surveying there prior to an issue that we had with Croatian authorities. However, the southern side of Virtus is known to be quite a little bit swampy. It'll definitely need a little bit of draining and sorting out before we build anything in southern Virtus.
When you say we, who are you talking about exactly, Daniel? Like, you're the president. I'm interested in how that was decided and who is around you and who is making these decisions.
Of course. So yeah, Virtus has an entire team. We have a foreign minister. We have a internal affairs minister. We have an office that's just opened in the UK, and we have representation there. And we're opening an office in Serbia. I was proclaimed as Virtus's president when Virtus was initially founded. It was basically a group decision with the friends that were involved at the time. And when the idea was reformed in 2023, people were still interested in having me on board as president, as I was the one that was spearheading the idea initially and getting the state to be established.
Where does the money come from? Because people would be asking, like, you're 21, obviously. I don't know whether you're a multi-billionaire and have a huge amount of money at your disposal, but I would think that you'd need some backing to get some of this stuff done, to make these trips, open offices. Like, that sounds like really expensive stuff.
There's a lot of funding that's come into Virtus since August. I believe it was reported that we've raised about $222,000 Australian dollars.
Wow.
So a lot of that comes from crowdfunding, Virtus's online programs. For example, we have what we call an e-residency program, where basically once you've been an e-resident for 11 months, you can then apply for Virtusian citizenship and get a Virtusian passport. Of course, you know, people have to pay to become part of that program because we have to issue documents and so on, and it's quite expensive. There was also an unofficial meme coin that actually raised a lot of funds for us, and we received those funds, and it was just called $Virtus, and I believe that raised about, I think, 40,000 euros alone. So there's quite a lot of different ways that Virtus has gained a lot of funding, also through investors.
I mean, what do you say to those people who are still thinking, I don't know, I feel like this guy's nuts, he's wasting time, he's throwing money at this for nothing, or I think maybe this is a cash grab, he's just trying to profit on people who are wanting hope of a better future?
I would tell them, go verify it. Go look at what we've done. We've existed for so many years, even before Virtus was running its own funds in. You know, we've committed so much time before when Virtus had its settlement. We had barely any funds coming in. That was all self-funded by us. We're not a cash grab at all.
There would be people listening thinking, but it doesn't exist because no states officially recognize it.
Well, we believe we have full rights to the land under international law. Even if no other state does recognize it, we are in communication with other countries that are interested in potentially recognizing Virtus, but right now Virtus is blockaded.
Which countries are kind of interested in potentially recognizing Virtus?
It's hard to say publicly because, you know, it's a bit of an issue in terms of, you know, they don't want to damage their relations with Croatia, but we are in contact with officials in a lot of neighboring countries, including Serbia. This is why we're opening an office here. Of course, as well, anywhere we open an office, there's a good hint to, you know, where we're starting to build relations quite well.
And what kind of people are really supporting this idea, Daniel? Like, are you finding it's a particular kind of person?
Yeah, absolutely. So when it comes to Gen Z itself, that is what Virtus's citizens mainly compose of. This is because this is being pushed a lot through social media, such as TikTok. Virtus is actually quite known, if you have read some of the news articles, as a bit of a Gen Z country. Of course, people are welcome regardless of their age, but there's definitely a lot, many more younger people involved in Virtus. And I think people get involved in Virtus for many reasons. It's not just its humanitarian side. Some people want to be part of building history. Could even be that they want to start a business in Virtus in the future. They want to settle down there. Many reasons, basically.
With the relationship with Croatia, I just want to go back there for a second. You mentioned that there have been some hostilities. That involved you being chased by the Croatian water police, right?
Yeah, that was only last year. I was permanently banned from Croatia when the permanent settlement was destroyed in October 2023.
Okay, so you can't enter Croatia?
No, unfortunately, I can't. And I find it ironic that they did that considering I wasn't even in their territory in the first place. There is a permanent blockade, even though Croatia still publicly insists that this land is not part of Croatia. You cannot access Virtus in any way whatsoever at the moment. It is completely blockaded. They usually have a police boat also down there and sometimes a dinghy as well. And if they're not down there, they have a bunch of cameras along the Danube River.
Daniel, micronations we know are nothing new. There is this perception out there, though, that the people who do this are a bit eccentric. I'm wondering, would you describe yourself that way, as being eccentric?
I'm definitely eccentric. I mean, not everyone wakes up and decides to go and create a country. But when it comes to the term of micronations, Virtus does itself avoid it itself, because I think micronations, they're more of a tongue-in-the-cheek idea. We already consider ourselves a state. We already consider ourselves a country. We may not be internationally recognized yet, but that's up to the international community to change those terms.
Is this your full-time job, or do you do other stuff as well to make a living and allow yourself to be able to travel and get around and promote this nation?
This is my full-time job. It's been my full-time job for a very long time. So I do have to accept a salary from Virtus because, of course, I need to be able to live. But I'm very careful with it. I'm not interested in earning from Virtus to make a profit. I'm interested in only earning from Virtus to live so I can make Virtus my full-time focus.
How many citizens have you got now? Like, how many people have signed up?
So we have about 400 citizens and about 2,000 e-residents. That's gone up by about 1,500 people since August, and it's rapidly growing.
And you mentioned some of them are Australians.
There are a few of them that are Australian, but most of Virtus's citizens are ethnic Serbs and Croats.
Right, okay. I mean, I've read somewhere that you've used your ID as well in the UK and that it actually works. It'll get you into clubs or whenever you need to prove your age.
Yeah, I mean, I use my Rhodesian passport all the time. I have heard reports of some people using it in countries that don't yet recognize Virtus diplomatically. For example, Macedonia. One of Virtus' citizens have actually crossed, leaving Greece on his Greek passport and entering Macedonia on his Rhodesian ID card and it's or passport, and it's never been a problem to him.
Wow.
So I find that quite funny.
Daniel, there might be some who are listening now who do feel a little uncomfortable about the idea of someone going and claiming land, because we know that this has happened throughout history. It's how many nations was started, a lot of contention about land apparently belonging to no one, the concept of terra nullius. In current times as well, we have leaders claiming land. Do you understand why people might be concerned by this idea or don't think there's a role for this kind of movement in the modern day?
Look, I understand it. But again, there's never been a native population here. There's no evidence of a settlement previously existing in Virtus. I think when it comes to other issues today where countries are going around claiming land that has a native population or isn't allowing them to have the right to self-determination, that's an entirely different issue. I think Virtus is unique over the fact that neither Croatia or Serbia claim this land. It's never historically been part of Croatia. And again, we have good relations with Croatian locals in Almaty, and we have good relations with Serbian locals in Apatin. We're contributing to their economy by being nearby.
All right, so you don't compare yourself to Donald Trump or Vladimir Putin, anything like that?
No, absolutely not. They're interested in regions that are very much populated and already claimed by other states or entities.
Would you want to be part of the European Union?
Unfortunately, the EU is not designed for small countries. This is why Monaco is not part of it, nor is Liechtenstein or Andorra. We would, of course, like to have good relations with the European Union, but the EU isn't designed for small countries.
I did see something saying that you'd be keen to enter Eurovision one day. Is that true?
I think it would be very cool for us to be in Eurovision, absolutely. We actually do have quite a bit of support from a number of Eurovision stars. For example, Luke Black, which was Serbia's Eurovision singer for 2023. He's actually quite supportive about Virtus. He's a friend of mine, and he's an absolutely great guy. We won't be able to look at joining until we become a member of the European Broadcasting Union, to which we need to build a station and we need the blockade lifted.
Okay, right.
So
yeah.
Until then, we won't be able to join the Eurovision.
There's a few challenges there. I mean, also that would go to sporting teams, you know, things like that. I've seen conversation around that saying you might want a football team, but obviously infrastructure, big problem at the moment. Do you sometimes look at what your life's become, Daniel, and think, how'd I go from growing up in Melbourne to starting my own country? Like, how did this happen? This idea that I think you even admit that started off as a bit of an experiment, a bit of a joke maybe, has turned into something very serious. Do you sometimes think, I invested a bit too hard here, or are you really proud of yourself?
I'm really proud of myself. It wouldn't have been possible with the amount of support that we have all over the world, and it wouldn't have been possible without the cabinet that I have. But it's full on, and sometimes it can be absolutely exhausting. But I'm very proud to see where Virtus is today, and knowing that I'm one of the people who were involved in building this, I wouldn't change anything to be away from this. Of course, when it comes to being Virtus's president, though, a lot of people have asked if I will step down, and I will be. I don't want to sound like I'm going to be involved forever. When it comes to Virtus right now, of how it's being governed, we're currently under a temporary government. We're operating in exile, functioning under a temporary constitution, which is what we call basic laws. Once the blockade has been lifted and Virtus has built more international recognition, more of its economy, more infrastructure, we will put in a vote for a new constitution. This constitution will determine how Virtus will be governed in the future. And once that's voted in, we will have elections. I don't plan to run in those elections. I plan to step down and live as a normal citizen in Virtus. And maybe I'll run in the future, but I won't run for the first few.
Daniel, what are your dreams for what Virtus might look like one day? If you think ahead, you're 21 now, if you think ahead to when you're in your 60s, 70s, many decades down the track, how would you like to see the country? What would it look like?
I would love to see the country as fully developed, fully internationally recognized, you know, have a fully democratic and functioning government, which, of course, it already does have a functioning and democratic government. but I would like to see us keep it that way. I would like to see us under much more progress, very modern and very developed. And I think as well, I would also like to see Virtus still be a leader in diplomacy, mediation, all of that as well.
Do you get a lot of questions? Like, do you often use your title when you're back home in the UK and, you know, President Daniel Jackson arrives somewhere, or has it helped you get a few upgrades? I'm interested in how being a president is as a 21-year-old.
I have been recognized quite a lot of times whenever I'm walking around. I usually get recognized a few times a week and someone goes and takes a photo with me or whatever. And it's absolutely amazing to see that sort of support. But I have had a few shopkeepers and someone recognize me as well. And they're like, oh, you could have this Coca-Cola for free. you know, it's on the house for Bernice, which is very polite. But no, I don't always use the title. Of course, I use it when I'm working as Bernice's president. But, you know, at the end of the day as well, it's always good to live a bit of normal life, to get away from things for every now and then. I think every president or head of state tries to do that every now and then, to have a bit of normality.
Well, look, this is the first time that I've had a president on Hack. We've had a few prime ministers, but the first time we've had a president. Thank you so much for joining us, Daniel Jackson, president of the Free Republic of Vertus. Really appreciate you coming on, and hopefully we'll be able to chat again soon.
No worries. Thank you again for having me. It's great to be on here and speak to fellow Australians.
Yeah, look, whatever you think of Daniel's idea, a lot of you will be asking, how does this actually stack up legally? Like, it's all well and good for Daniel to say he has a claim, but does he? Well, Dr. Harry Hobbs is an associate professor in law at the University of New South Wales. He's also an expert on micronations. He's with us now. Harry, do you think Vertus could become a legitimate, recognised country?
It's tough, right? The way international law works, there are four conditions you need to meet in order to become a state, become a real country. You need to have a territory, you need to have a permanent population, you need to have a government, and you need to have the capacity to enter relations with other governments. So Daniel's got a territory, right? He's claimed a piece of land that isn't claimed by any other country. He's got a government that he's set up online. I think the government's in exile at the moment. He's also got a capacity to enter relations with other countries, right? He says, look, I want to sign a treaty with you. I'll sign agreements with you left, right, and center. The thing he hasn't got at the moment is a permanent population, and that's because Croatia won't let him settle there. And so without a permanent population, he's not going to be able to form a state. He's not going to be able to meet those international criteria or international legal criteria to be a state, unfortunately. Now, if he can settle there and he can get, you know, a group of 50, 60, 100 people, that might be enough to say, hey, I've got enough people here, a permanent population, I'm a state. Even though he might meet the international legal criteria, the next question is, so what? Right. And so you can be a state, you can meet all the criteria, but if other countries don't treat you as a state, if they don't think you're part of the club, then it doesn't really help.
Daniel's saying that he's using this concept, legal concept of terra nullius, which people might be aware of through Australia's own history. And can you explain what terra nullius actually is?
Yeah. So terra nullius is a Latin term, right? It's a Latin concept. It means land belonging to no one. And it became a really key legal principle, a legal concept in the age of exploration, the age of discovery or the age of colonization, where European explorers would go around the world looking at other people's land and say, we want that to be part of our empire. Now, it wasn't really the acknowledged legal basis when the British first arrived in Australia, but basically it became that popularly understood notion of what the legal basis for British acquisition of sovereignty or British settlement was in Australia, which basically said, look, we don't think the people who have been here for 60,000 years, we don't think that they are civilized enough. And so we're going to treat them as if they don't actually exist. And so there's no land here that belongs to anyone. And so we'll be here, we'll take over the first time. Now, international law, as you might some sense, doesn't really like this term anymore. This idea, this legal principle of terra nullius is very much, you know, been trying to expunge from history. And so if Daniel got to the International Court of Justice and tried to rely on terra nullius, I think you'd have some challenges there making that argument. But of course, in this particular context, the land really is claimed by no one. So it might well work here. I must say, most people say they're doing it for real, but no micronation has ever been accepted into the club of real states. And so even though I think Daniel, you know, good luck to him, I think it is going to be a tough sell.
As someone who's been researching micronations for quite a while, Harry, like, do you feel like there is a growing interest in what they represent or in setting them up? Like, are we seeing more micronations pop up around the world?
I think people do it for lots of different reasons, right? And I think there's something to be said about the ideology or the motivation for it. In a lot of these cases, people set them up for really, I would say, reasons that I support, right? The idea that a global humanity, a sense that borders are not important, and this is a way to sort of draw community together, draw connection together.
A lot of people might have a laugh about some of this stuff that's going on, but are there some real concerns or issues with the concepts of these micronations and the citizenship being offered to people where you can buy citizenship or buy residency in these nations that really don't officially exist?
Yeah, there have been. And so one of the things that you do when you set up a country is you say, look, I want everyone to join this, right? The whole point is to have citizens have a community. And so many people set up their country and set up an online citizen register. Pay me $50, pay me $10, send in your details, I'll make you a citizen of my country. And it's a bit of a fun thing to do, right? It's a laugh. You can sign up to a few different countries. You might get some sort of connection with them, join their online forums. It's all very fun. The challenge is that even if Virtus and other micronations don't actually have any legal recognition, they exist in the real world. And so people who might not understand that they're fake or a laugh or a joke or even just a serious attempt to become a real country but not real yet may sign up. And so we saw, particularly during the Syrian refugee crisis around 10, 15 years ago, that a lot of people signed up to Micronations websites, signed up to Micronations countries, joined their citizens, became citizens of these countries, and then said, well, I'm seeking asylum. I'm a member of your country. Please, can you rescue me? And that's really serious, right? That people put in a lot of money trying to save themselves, save their family, look after themselves, and find out that they've been scammed, essentially, in their view.
What do you reckon, Harry? Do you think one day we will see a successful micronation?
I can't see it. I've been looking at this for a number of years. It doesn't say that I don't want it to happen. I just think it's very hard to do because it's a club, right? It's a difficult club to get in. It's like you're sitting on the bouncer looking at your shoes and says, you know, am I going to let you in or not? In this case, I think what benefit do real recognised states have for letting Daniel join their club? You know, what's in it for them, basically? If nothing's in it for them, he's not going to get in. I've been wrong before. I'm wrong every year when I pick my teams for the footy, right? So it doesn't mean I'm going to be right here.
Harry Hobbs, Associate Professor in the Faculty of Law at the University of New South Wales. Thanks for your time.
Thanks for having me.
Hack on Triple J.
So there you go. It could be, but... it probably won't be. Either way, it is a fascinating story. I've loved learning more about these ideas and these young people who are determined to forge their own path. If you like that chat, subscribe to this podcast. We've always got big interviews going up every week. You can also follow Hack on socials as well, at Triple J Hack, on Instagram and on TikTok. That is all for now. I'll catch you next time. Hack.